to your health comes in part from Dr. Theodore Watkins of the Watkins Institute. Dr. Watkins advocates holistic medicine and teaches lifestyle changes. Further information is available at www.twiliving.com.
You know that health is wealth, and ital is vital. They're not just some rhyming words. It's something that's just got to be heard. Who is responsible for your health? Look in the mirror, it's your very own self. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ital is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ital is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else. Tracking with the herb of the field for the healing of the nation. Fruit and vegetable for medication. So much food, so much variation. Sustenance for all generation. It's there in abundance. Vitamins and minerals and whole heap of nutrients. Anti-inflammatory and antioxidants. Give your temple a chance, cause health is wealth, ital is vital. You gotta take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ital is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else. Vegan, we're vegan. Plant BS, we say, long time Rastafari. Say I de so he de. I tell we I tell, nah gone away. And we root and we fruit and we vegetable all the way. Cause health is wealth, ital is vital. You gotta take care of yourself. Health is wealth.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of To Your Health. Health is wealth, and To Your Health is a program designed not only to inform, but to turn your life and health around. I am Dr. Theodore Watkins, the host of To Your Health, and I'm excited to be to have us with us today, our tremendous assistant and producer, Mr. Frank Smith. And we also have back with us Paula Jacobs, who is one of our nutritional experts that will assist me in discussing our topic today, which is one that many may not even consider, have considered of importance. But I hope that after today's show, that you will look at food addictions in a different light. Food addictions, our topic for today. Welcome, Brother Frank.
Yes, sir. Hey, Paula.
Hi, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
You know, as we define food addictions, we say that it describes a behavioral addiction that's characterized by compulsive consumption of specific, highly palatable foods that's rich in sugar, fat, salt, you know. And unfortunately, Frank and Paula, many of the foods that we consume on a regular basis are addictive.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Correct.
And yeah. one of the critical things that we find that because of this addiction to foods, we've lost control of our eating. And we have an intense craving and even preoccupation with food. You know,
yeah.
Now I must admit, Paula, I like eating, you know, and I'm sure that I'm addicted to the beans and rice, right? being addicted to beans and rice is not a problem, but right. There are some core issues with being addicted to certain foods, you know, the continued use of these foods, in spite of their negative consequences, are associated with a lot of adverse health issues.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main ones is weight gain. All right. One of the main ones is weight gain. Another problem with these foods is we've talked about it many, many times, Brother Frank,
mm-hmm.
inflammation.
Yeah.
These addictive foods cause a lot of inflammation in our bodies and even in our brain.
Yeah, which leads to other diseases, dementia, and diabetes and cancer.
Depression, anxiety, you know. And what happens is that there are triggers in the brain's reward system. There's actually a reward system that's built into us. And it's supposed to be, Sister Paula, so that we can eat good foods. All right?
Right.
But unfortunately, this food addiction leads to a similar reward system as we see with the use of drugs. Mm. All right? Narcotic drugs. And so that's not mm-hmm. too good. So
right.
Now the literature says that it's difficult to really establish the prevalence, how prevalent food allergies are, because it doesn't have a diagnosis attached to it that's recognized by the general medical public. However, it is estimated that overall about 20% of people are addicted to food. Women are twice as likely, about 12.2%, men about 6.4%. But if you're obese, you're almost 25%, 24.9, one study says, likely to be addicted to food. Now, older adults, and they were defined as between 50 and 80, so I don't know where that puts me, Frank. older adults are even more likely than men or women to be addicted to foods.
Mm.
So, but I believe, Sister Paula, that about 90% of Americans are addicted. Now, am I crazy?
No.
Absolutely not. In fact, there are many studies that are showing the increasing connection and association with addictive foods, food addiction, and obesity, and it's not by accident. And you're absolutely right. Many of these, some of the literature describes as hyper palatable foods, have some key component ingredients that trigger or hijack the brain's reward system, as you were mentioning earlier, and they lead to neurobiological changes that drive a compulsive overconsumption of these foods. Some of these culprits, as we could say, are found in highly processed foods like sugar, fat, and salt. And so, and I'd like to point out that the type of fat that is in these processed foods is probably a trans fat or saturated fat or some type of altered fat that the body, once it's broken down, it leads the brain to desire more of these same foods.
Now, I know it's just an accident that this is happening. No one would possibly design food, negative foods, to be addictive.
To enrich themselves.
That's right. And if they did do that, our government would immediately step in.
Yes.
And put these rascals in under the jail. So we have to assume that this is happening. Unnoticed by individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, I don't know, I may be wrong, Sister Paula. There may be a little intentionality.
I think you're absolutely correct. There's a great intentionality in the way that many of these processed foods are processed, and part of the drive for this is financial gain. And unfortunately, it does not put in the forefront the health and wellness of everyday citizens, everyday people. But I also believe that it is incumbent upon us to learn to eat the best of our fruits and vegetables, and also to possibly grow some of our own foods and cook or make our meals in a way that increases health and wellness, reduces inflammation or eliminates inflammation, and allows us to have healthy weight, as well as healthy blood pressure and good wellness overall, especially as it relates to cardiac health and preventing diabetes and cancer.
So, Brother Frank, one of the reasons I wanted to do this particular program is I want to sensitize our listening audience to the decisions that they're making that are adversely affecting their health. All right. So, you know, I'm not looking to industry or the government to step in and make radical changes in the way these foods are deliberately prepared to addict us. I mean, it's quite well known that for many years Coca-Cola actually had cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Its formula. But they don't need cocaine in the formula to addict one to Coca-Cola anymore. They have what?
Sugar.
Mm-hmm. Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Which is as, if not more, addictive than cocaine.
Yes.
You know, and plus it's probably a little cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good financial decision to switch from cocaine to sugar, to addict the public to this menace. But we unfortunately gladly go along with the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that gets me right in the heart, you know, that too many of us are willing, what do you want to call it? Victims. Maybe that's not even a good word, because cooperators, willing cooperators with this plot to destroy our health and our lives. What were you going to say, Sister Paula?
Oh, I was just agreeing with you that, you know, many of us are have become victims or participants, and some, unfortunately, unknowingly. I think one leg of this, quote unquote, epidemic of food addiction that very much is evidenced by rates of obesity is the growing connection between food insecurity and food addiction. If you go in certain neighborhoods and you will not find a good grocery store for a couple of miles, or that you will find many convenience stores that have so many of these addictive foods or foods laden and high in sugar, fat, bad fat, or salt. And but you may not find as many fresh fruits, vegetables.
Wait, Paula. You will not find any. You know, I was just, as you were talking, I was just thinking about a store that was in the neighborhood for my office. It closed down. Fortunately, it closed down during COVID. But there was not one fresh article in that store. Everything was processed, you know. And so, you know, and those are the kinds of things that we have now. You know, one of the things that you can give credit to the food industry is that they actually have studied the body and understand the pathophysiology of a food addiction. And one of the core mechanisms involves something we call the mesolimbic dopamine pathway. now that's a fancy word, but what you have indicated that dopamine is released after exposure to this highly palatable foods, good tasting foods, you know, enjoyable foods, sugar laden, salt laden, fat laden foods, and it produces these foods produce pleasure. And they reinforce the behavior. They make you want to do it again. It's so nice, I want to do it twice. You know, and not just twice, 300-400 times, you know. You know, and we don't even consider that this stuff is deleterious to our health, you know. And what happens is not only is there dopamine involved, which is such a vital thing. You know, I tell my patients when they're depressed or anxiety or anxious, they need to eat foods or take some L-tryptophan, because it leads to L-serotonin, which leads to L-dopamine. And in the body, L-dopamine will decrease depression and relieve anxiety, you know. in its natural form. But what they're doing is that they're stimulating this L-dopamine to a point that it actually, they call it down-regulate, you know, that you have to take much more of these concentrated calorie-dense foods in order to receive the pleasure, you know.
Same effect, right.
Yeah, you know, Frank, I think they with cocaine, they call it, cocaine and heroin, they call it, what's that, when you get the first shot, I forget the term they use.
High?
Yeah, it's a high that you get, you know, and then after you get that high initially, you keep running, trying to reach it again. And it's difficult because you have to take more and more. And some, I've heard that some people with these drugs have found people with a needle in their arm from an overdose and take that needle out their arm and shoot up themselves trying to get that high, you know, and the same thing has happened with foods. We're running, trying to get that high again that we had when we had that last piece of fried chicken. Lord, that was good. I want to do it again.
Yep.
You know, but there's my story. Also, huh?
You telling my story.
Hey, man. I used to be there too, brother. Especially when it came to sugar.
Yeah.
I tell people I was truly a good sugar addict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, because I ate sugar all the time. Mm-hmm. All right. But not only is dopamine involved in the process, there's some endogenous opioids that are released. All right. And there are areas in the brain, anterior genuvolate cortex and the orbital frontal cortex that produces this craving or impulse control if we overstimulate.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, in other words, it's taking something that God put in us to be a benefit and disrupting it, you know, so that there's what we call neuroadaptation and dysregulation. Sister Paula, neuroadaptation and dysregulation,
yeah.
All these nice sounding terms, but what they indicate is there's this chronic excessive consumption that leads to an addictive-like changes in our brain. Lord have mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And we develop a tolerance, hypersensitivity reward, you know? And so we want to get that high again, because the brain has become less sensitive to the rewarding effects of dopamine. Dopamine is supposed to bring you pleasure, you know?
Yes.
Right.
From food, from sex, from laughter, you know, dopamine does that. But in individuals that have developed this neuroadaptive or dysregulation, they need markedly increased amounts of food to achieve the same pleasure. Mm-hmm. And the foods that they're getting, Paula, what kind of foods?
The processed foods, high in sugar, high in fat, high in salt. There's a study that identified problematic foods, especially as reported by adults with food insecurity. In this particular study were chips, non-diet soda, pizza, ice cream, chocolate, things like this that have hyper amounts of sugar and the fat and the salt and also flavor enhancers that are designed to greatly increase the flavor, the flavor profile, to make you, not only does it make you desire it even more, but it attempts to hijack the brain's reward system or circuit. Similarly, like as we were mentioning earlier, to how drug abuse or drug use would in that specific situation. And so it's very important for us to learn and educate our palate to eat foods in their natural state, also to cook in such a way or prepare meals in such a way that has everything in balance and not so much sodium or so much sugar that it numbs the brain and overrides the neurotransmitters and the brain reward circuit system.
You know, Brother Frank, a part of this neuroadaptive dysregulation is that it actually impairs cognitive control. Now, Brother Frank, what does that mean? What does that mean? It impairs cognitive control.
It affects your thinking so that you'll find yourself walking to the refrigerator when you didn't mean to walk to the refrigerator. You'll find yourself going to get the chips at the store and when you... That was the furthest thing from your mind, from your
and it's amazing, you know, because what happens is you're literally out of your mind. You have impaired cognitive control. Now we talk about cognition when it comes to dementia, but we talk about people who are not demented. Maybe they are, you know, but they have actually lost or have impaired cognitive control.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. And the folk who design stores, have uniquely set up that as they go to checkout, there's the candy. The chocolate, the stuff that will highly addict you, right there, as you slow down, and you just get a chance to look at it
when you know. Go in and when you come out.
When you go in and when you come out, you know, you walk, they don't have the fresh vegetables and the fruits there. Look at the candy. So that you can, you know, and they got the cookies, you know, and they got the ones you like. Oh, man, I just love them chocolate chip cookies, you know. Fortunately, I don't like chocolate chip cookies, but I just love them chocolate chips. But then they got the ones I like, the oatmeal raisin. Oh, man, they got them situated right there. You know, got the Snicker bars that used to cost 5 cents.
Yeah. I don't know what they cost now.
They're over a dollar, you know, and they don't even taste good. I succumbed one time, Frank. I have to admit, I was cognitively impaired. And I bought one of those things, remembering back in the day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Back in the day when they were really good, and I spent that money, and man, I was so mad afterwards because it didn't even taste good.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We have
tastes horrible.
Yes, we have difficulty to resist the urge. All right, and we've literally lost control. Mercy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is amazing, man.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost control of this decision-making ability, you know, and so we up here spending our money, you know, and what happens is that they call it a shift, all right? They call it a shift. They say that food addiction represents a shift from homeostatic eating.
Healthy.
That's eating for energy needs,
mm-hmm.
you know, to supply your body with what it needs to grow and to heal and so forth, to hedonic eating.
Mm-hmm.
Hedonic eating.
Mm-hmm.
You're eating for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Lord. And the pleasure overrides ultimately self-control.
Mm-hmm. It's just like drugs. It's worse than drugs because you have to eat several times a day.
So now, if we look at disease and mortality and food addictions, while food addiction, as I said, has no formal diagnosis in the main diagnostic manual, things like the DSM-5, which we look at, you know, if you don't have a diagnosis, I was told when I first started my practice, you can't get paid. So food addiction don't have a diagnosis. So your doctor can't just diagnose you with food addiction. But diseases that are associated with food addiction, like obesity-related illnesses, have a much broader impact on the population,
mm-hmm.
than even direct addiction to drugs,
mm-hmm.
when it relates to death.
Mm-hmm.
Lord have mercy. Now help me, Brother Frank. Am I saying that you're more likely to die from the addiction to food than an addiction to drugs?
Yes, and it's geometric. You know,
explain that, brother.
It's much worse than addiction to drugs or alcohol or cigarettes. Mm-hmm. It's much worse. I mean, people die in the thousands every year from food addiction causes.
So obesity, Paula, you mentioned obesity related mm-hmm. illnesses. And if we just look at that alone, all right, heart disease is associated with obesity,
mm-hmm.
Which is number one killer in this
number country. One killer.
Cancer is associated with obesity, which is number two killer. Strokes are associated with obesity. Hypertension, hyperlipidemias, and that's just to name a few. And these few are associated with millions of deaths every year.
Mm-hmm.
Lord have mercy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Worldwide.
Huh?
Worldwide.
And it's worldwide because we are
exporting
our
sad diets
to other countries. You know, mm-hmm. I remember this guy. He was a missionary to Africa, and he told me that they went in and they took the whole grain rice and they processed it and took out all the vitamins and minerals,
mm.
and then sold back to the unsuspecting Africans this processed rice, and they called it enriched, Paula.
Wow.
They called it enriched rice. And because it had a few vitamins and minerals added back to it. Now, these vitamins and minerals are what we call coal tar vitamins and minerals, which the body has difficulty even utilizing. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, Paula.
So you are correct. You are correct. I want to just submit something here.
All right.
That there is hope. And
is there hope?
Jesus, there's hope. There's hope. Jesus says, he says, I have come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. And everything that God has created as far as food offers us life. Jesus also describes himself in the Bible as the bread of life. Mm. And what do we find in good and healthy bread? It's rich in fiber, rich in whole grains, rich in nutrients, vitamins, minerals, and those same components, in some form or fashion can be found in well-grown fruits and vegetables.
Now why did you say well-grown, Paula?
Referring to organic farming, but if you're growing your vegetables, you can grow your vegetables in your own yard. You can be your own farmer and farm a seed, being that the fruits and vegetables are coming from your own garden. And so this is the hope that we have, that we can control. We can play a major role in our own wellness, our own health. We don't have to leave it up to the government or the stores that are full of some processed foods. We can be the captain of this wellness ship by eating fruits, vegetables, nuts, whole grains, because that helps to reset the palate and to bring into balance, eliminate inflammation, bring into balance bring back into balance that whole brain gut connection, that whole brain reward system that has been abused or aggravated by the
been hijacked, as you said earlier, been hijacked.
Correct. It's been hijacked, but we can do something about it.
We can rescue it.
Yes.
All right. The number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. If you have a question or comment, please feel free to give us a call. Because Paula says that there's hope. You know, we don't have to continue to be hijacked. that there's something that we can do to make a difference in our lives, and I'm excited about that. But give us a call with questions or comments. 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. So Brother Frank, what do you have to say about what Paula just said?
I have some tips. Avoid the triggers. People, including family, they will lead you down the wrong path. And when I had to change my life, and avoid a cure the cancer, I had to cut people off, including my immediate family, because I couldn't go where they went. I couldn't go to restaurants. I couldn't go to holiday events, because I knew that it was a trigger for me. Plus, I didn't want to see them eating the wrong stuff. I knew at that point. Places, restaurants, grocery stores, fast food places, television, other media, you have to avoid that. You know, that's a trigger.
It's interesting. I've even said on this program, I believe that one of the most difficult times for a person who's trying to make changes is during the holidays when families are getting together.
Yes, yes.
Because they put such pressure on you to eat that stuff. But you have to, when I was in college, we would go to Burger King and they would order a Whopper, and I would order a Whopper without the meat, and they would laugh. All right. Now who's laughing?
They all sick or dead.
It's actually the truth. As I think about back on those guys that we would go and now I won't even go and get the meatless Whopper now because it has white bread. And at the time I was eating cheese, so I can't even eat the meatless Whopper. But the point was, they laugh, but I laugh too.
Mm-hmm.
And he who laughs last, Paula, laughs best.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to recognize that there is hope. That there's things that we can do to treat these food addictions. There's some behavioral or psychological interventions. And why do we need to make psychological interventions, Brother Frank?
Yeah, because that's most important. It starts with your mind. It starts with change. All change starts with your mind.
As a man thinketh, so is he. So we have to learn to one of the things is abstinence based model, where you completely eliminate specific problem foods.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now I admit, Brother Frank, that for most people that is not easy but oftentimes when patients come to me and they have life-threatening diseases, we don't suggest that they do moderation. I think it was Dr. Colin Campbell or Dr. Todd Estelston that said moderate change leads to moderate disease, leads to moderate death. this abstinence model is difficult, but it's, especially for some people, it's the best model to take,
Yes, yes, yes. Cancer is not easy. Heart disease or heart attack is not easy. Diabetes, and the complications, amputation, blindness, that's not easy. This is easy. Abstinence is easy compared to that.
Yes, yes. When we look at what the alternative is, it's easy. There's the cognitive behavioral therapy, where you actually identify and challenge your thought patterns and the triggers, Paula.
Mm-hmm.
You got to challenge yourself.
That's a challenge.
Yeah. When we were all of us when we were in school, we had to make some decisions, you know. Mm-hmm. Do I party or do I study? Mm-hmm. You know? And there certainly there's a time to party, but I remember my senior year in high school, Frank, I'm in there studying for my finals. It's the finals now, the week of the finals. And one of my boys knocked on my door, said, "You want to play some cards?" I said, "Man, are you crazy?" I love to play cards, but I got to march.
Sure.
You know? And so we have to work on the cognitive behavioral patterns that we have. And then there's also pharmaceutical intervention. Pharmaceutical. There's something called naltrexone, Brother Frank.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Naltrexone, it's an opiate antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Meaning that it blocks the depletion of these substances so that the body can use them in a positive way, you know. And there are even things that will inhibit the reuptake of the dopamine, you know. Dopamine reuptake inhibitors, they call. Mm-hmm. And if you got a question or a comment, give us a call. We just have a couple of minutes. We're going to quickly go to this caller. Yes, caller, you're on the line.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes. Speak a little louder.
Okay, yeah, I can barely hear you. You know, the Black community, our community is the culture that really is dying, before anybody other than these other culture groups that's in the country. They're saying that Blacks are dying of all kinds of, health problems, you know. And including cancer, heart disease, diabetes, you name it. You know, it's Black community that's dying off first. And then again, the government, see, Black people, our people, I'm pointing out our people, because it seems to be that the highest on the record, that we're not reading, we're not doing the things we should do to know about what's going on with the government, with their, the agriculture department, with the foods that they give us, the meats and the things like that. They're not clean efficiently, I don't believe, because my husband and I, we don't deal with meat too much anymore. You know, we're on the old time fashion things like chicken and dumplings and things like that. Poultry, I guess, is still okay. But even in the chicken.
But it's not okay. It's not okay.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. It's not okay. There have been numerous studies to show that chicken is perhaps one of the worst meats that you can eat.
It's worse than beef.
But we don't know. We are not, as you said, we don't read, and so we don't know. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, we don't eat a lot of chicken either. What I'm saying is, when we have dumplings, we will. Put a little of the chicken. We make sure it's clean, for one thing. See, a lot of Black people don't clean. They're not cleaning their foods efficiently. And look, stay away from the stuff we used to, you know, Black people used to love, the soul food. That's killing us, the chitlings, mm-hmm. and the pig feet. And a large of the Black community is still on that crap. So get away from it.
And I agree with you totally. You know, we need to get away from that. And there are also some natural things that we can do. You know, we can do stress reduction. You know,
yes.
You know, we can eat foods high in fiber. We can exercise on a regular basis. Exercise actually helps to regulate the dopamine and the opioid systems. You know, mm-hmm. The fiber helps to swell the stomach and have early satiety or fullness, satisfaction. Yes. Herbs like fenugreek, which is high in soluble and insoluble fiber, which delays stomach emptying and gives you that sense of fullness. There's 5-HTP, which we talked about earlier. That's a precursor to the serotonin that plays a role in mood regulation, you know, and appetite suppression. Mm-hmm. They're magnesium, which is a mineral cofactor found in working with over 300 enzyme systems in the body that helps us. There's omega-3 fatty acids that help brain health, mood, and dopamine regulation. There's curcumin from turmeric, which promotes the release of dopamine and is a noted antidepressant. So there's help for us,
mm-hmm.
but we got to want it and go after it, all right? Mm-hmm. And if we do that, I'm telling you, Sister Paula, we can overcome these cravings.
Could I just say one more thing? Now, the other gentleman was speaking. He was right because he
our time is up. Okay. But we appreciate your call,
Doc. We're gonna have to do another show on this. Sister Paula, you want to give your contact information out real quick?
Yes. My name is Paula Jacobs. I'm a nutritionist, and I work one-on-one with clients. I can be reached at area code 602-592-2709 or on Facebook under Paula Jacobs. My number is area code 602-592-2709.
Thank you, Paula.
Give us a call today. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Dr. Watkins, for this vital information about food addiction. Immense thanks to our engineers, Kalia Chapman, Mike Nasella, and Mayuki Williams, Acting General Manager, Katia Stitt, Program Director, and all the tireless, hardworking WPFW staff, programmers, volunteers, and we want to thank our loyal listeners. Thank you, Maka B, for your music contributions. Stay tuned to WPFW Jazz and Justice Radio. Next up is African Deep Thought Edition with Brother Kaba. After that is To the East with Ambrose Lane Jr. Listen in next Monday at 2 p.m. for another life-saving broadcast of To Your Health. You can listen to a recording of this and other broadcasts by going to wpfwfm.org/archives.
Vital is vital, you gotta take care of yourself. Health is wealth. Vital is vital, you can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth. Vital is vital, try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth. Vital is vital, you can't rely on nobody else. Mr. Prevention is better than cure. You can't rely on the system no more. Say all over the West, the health care in a mess, especially for the poor, that's for sure. Eat good, exercise, and try your best. My business, the doctor, less and less. In your own health, you have to invest.
The Capital Area Food Bank is offering free food distribution for federal workers starting now until the government reopens. Federal employees and contractors will need to show a government work ID to receive food. Distribution times and sites are as follows. Tuesdays, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at No Limits Outreach Ministries, 7721 Barlow Road, Hyattsville, Maryland. Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at So What Else, 6116 Executive Boulevard, North Bethesda, Maryland. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at United Community, 7511 Fordston Road, Alexandria, Virginia. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Urban Outreach, 5343 C Street, Southeast, Washington, D.C. Saturdays, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Linda Benn Foundation, 10739 Tucker Street, Beltsville, Maryland. WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. It is day 34 of the government shutdown, one day shorter than the longest shutdown in history, which lasted 35 days under President Trump's first term. The Senate is scheduled to return from a weekend recess at 3 p.m. this afternoon. In the previous votes, most Democrats have refused to support any legislation that does not restore cuts to Medicaid and extend subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, which will expire at the end of the year. Meanwhile, due to the shutdown, funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, dried up for the first time ever on Saturday, November 1st. SNAP helps more than 42 million Americans buy food. While the Trump administration initially declined to use the available $5 billion of emergency funds to keep SNAP going, the administration has now agreed to do so after two federal judges ruled that the administration needs to make at least partial payments for SNAP, asking that they not delay those beyond Wednesday. Federal agents were able to thwart a potential Halloween terror attack in Michigan with the arrest of two U.S. citizens who were said to be inspired by ISIS, a known terrorist organization that follows a particularly violent, extreme interpretation of Islamic law. The suspects, Mohamed Ali and Majed Mahmoud, who were arrested on Friday, face charges of, quote, receiving and transferring and attempting and conspiring to transfer firearms and ammunition, knowing and having reasonable cause to believe that the firearms and ammunition would be used to commit a federal crime of terrorism, end quote. Upon searching homes on Friday, FBI agents found multiple AR-15-style rifles, shotguns, handguns, and tactical vests, as well as more than 1,600 rounds of ammunition that are compatible with the AR-15-style rifles. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Michigan, if these men are convicted of the charges against them, they could face up to 15 years in federal prison and a $250,000 fine. Jurors returned to court this morning to hear more testimony in the case of former Newport News, Virginia schoolteacher Abby Zwirner, who on January 6, 2023, was seriously injured when a 6-year-old male student with a history of disciplinary problems shot her during class. The gun in the shooting belonged to the student's mother. Since that time, the boy's mother, who said she takes responsibility for the shooting, was sentenced to jail time, and Abby Zwirner has filed a $40 million lawsuit against school system personnel. Her lawsuit alleges that Ebony Parker, the school's assistant principal at the time, ignored warnings from teachers and staff that students had seen the firearm, and that the shooting student had removed an object that was likely a firearm from his backpack before it was searched. Ebony Parker, who resigned 2 weeks after the shooting, argues that she is not responsible for the student harming his teacher, and that she had no legal duty to intervene. Meanwhile, Abby Zwirner has given an emotional testimony, saying that she thought she was dying when she was shot. Medical professionals also testified in her behalf, with a psychiatrist saying that Zwirner has suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, and an orthopedic surgeon testified saying that Zwirner's hand, which she held up to block the shot to her chest, will never be normal again despite 6 surgeries. In the D.C. area, it's the end of an era for Six Flags America, a.k.a. the thrill capital of D.C. The Bowie, Maryland location closed its gates for the last time yesterday after more than 50 years of operation. The closure comes after it was announced in May that this will be the last season for Six Flags and its water park, Hurricane Harbor, due to CEO Richard Zimmerman claiming that the parks are not a, quote, strategic fit for the company's long-term growth plans. Many came from the DMV and beyond to experience the amusement park for the last time on Sunday before it was too late. As people exited Six Flags America for the final time, they walked by a sign quoting Porky Pig that fittingly read, "That's all, folks." In today's weather, it's currently about 65 degrees in D.C.